large measure the focus of the entire middle section of the second work of Shmuel, Sefer Shmuel Bet. And at one level, we can understand it as punishment slash consequence of the sin of Bathsheba. But at another level, it really has its own independent dynamic to it. And what I want to try to do is proceed very slowly and very systematically to try to understand the different component parts of the rebellion. And the rebellion has to be understood as everything in life in its context and at multiple levels. So to be sure, there's a political element to it in terms of what is David's relationship vis-a-vis the people. If there's any kind of a successful coup, that already tells you something about the present regime. Is there a disconnect? And so it has to be understood at what you might call the political level. It has to be understood, obviously, at the spiritual level. We already alluded to that. How this relates to David's sin with Bathsheba. David causing the destruction of another man's family, of Uriah Hachiti, and the consequences for David's own family. We've been dealing with that for quite some time in terms of Amnon and Tamar and Avshalom. And it certainly has to be understood at the spiritual level. But I think, perhaps above all, it has to be understood at the familial level, and in particular with respect to David's relationship with Avshalom, which we've noted has taken on a very passive kind of dynamic. David was unable to generate a reaction with respect to what happened to Tamar, and then Avshalom flees to his maternal grandfather, and Yoav then begins to engage in these machinations to bring the Isha Chachama from Tekoa and tell a story. And the result of that encounter is that Avshalom's brought back to Yerushalayim, but David, won't interact with him. And then Avshalom, as we talked about last week, burns down Yoav's field, which is, as I mentioned last week, a rather unconventional way of getting somebody's attention, right? I think Danny, who's been supervising the Boy Scouts now for many, decades, they don't teach that in the Boy Scouts, setting a campfire to get somebody's attention, in a destructive sense. And so David, again, very passively reacts to that. Avshalom comes in and, David kisses him, and we're going to have to evaluate how that pattern develops. So what I want to try to cover tonight, again, just to proceed very systematically, is the opening, the very opening phase of the rebellion, when Avshalom begins to lay the groundwork for what will become his rebellion. But it's as I think we noted last week, Avshalom has the capacity to be a very calculating person. We'll recall that he waited a number of years before striking out against Amnon. And so this isn't going to be, if you know anything about Avshalom, it's certainly not going to be, something where it's ad hoc, where he hasn't thought things through. And on the contrary, it will actually be, a kind of a painstakingly planned endeavor. One that I think will perhaps implicate one of the points that we made last week, which was that Avshalom, for all of his planning, there's a kind of a fraudulent aspect to him. Last week we talked about how, according to many views, Avshalom is a Nazir Olam. He's somebody, who, at least in theory, should reflect a higher degree of piety, and he's turned his, physicality, he's described last week as a very striking person in his appearance. And he was clearly flaunting that, at this annual shearing that he underwent. So I think we'll see, that aspect of his character as well. So on the one hand, both very deliberate, and on the other hand, very cunning, manipulative, and in some sense, there's something vacuous about a person, who's, fraudulent in that way, who puts on deceptive front. So with that, let's take a look at some of the psukim and try to evaluate. Okay, so the Navi tells us, Vahim me'achrei chen, v'yaslo Avshalom merkava, v'susim v'chamishim ish ratzim lefanav. So Avshalom, very striking. This is the opening phase. So he establishes for himself a chariot, right? It couldn't be Air Force One, could maybe be Air Force Two, but it was, you know, Air Force Three. Visusim, right? And he, you know, has these horses. And he's got 50 men running in front of him. So he's projecting this image as, you know, certainly an important player, kind of a crown prince. Amnon is out of the way. Shlomo is young yet. So he's certainly projecting himself, I would say, as a kind of inevitability. So it's very important for us to, before we go any further, to understand this. Avshalom, this is now, I think, the second major piece of evidence that indicates that he had an appreciation of appearances. And what I mean by that is he understood how appearance can influence perception and how that perception can then influence reality. Remember, he uses his physicality, you know, his very striking appearance, right? He creates a kind of, you know, as we talked about, an event around that. And now he's projecting the image of a royal personage. He has a Merkava, he has Susim, Chamishim Ish Ratzim Lefanav. Now, I think, you know, we have to, again, take pause to reflect on the fact that David has never done anything like this. On the contrary, David was always the shepherd king. We read the Haftorah on Shabbos. And remember that image where Michal is looking down from the window and David is dancing with the common people, as we discussed? And, you know, she's just mortified. This is humiliating. He's dancing with the commoners, you know, and she, you know, really tears into him. Manichbada yom melech Yisrael asher nigla yom l'inei amos avadav. And David is unsparing in his rebuke of her, and, you know, basically says, Hashem asher bachar bi mikol beis avich, this is why God rejected your father, because, you know, he was a person who postured, and he was a person who was superficial. V'im ha-mahos asher amart imam ikaveda, that David HaMelech is not embarrassed to dance with the commoners, but David is humble before God. So here we have this fascinating thing where Avshalom wants to present himself as the obvious heir to David by staging, you know, this grand ceremony, but at the same time he couldn't be less like David, because, you know, David's entire, they would call today a brand, a term that offends me, but David's right entire persona, and I mean that in a serious sense, is one of sincerity and humility and simplicity, to Michal's great mortification. She thinks he's too much, you know, a part of the common people. And Avshalom is obviously, you know, presenting himself in this kind of a royal position, but really doesn't reflect anything about his father. Vishkim Avshalom, so Avshalom would get up day in and day out. Ve'amar al yad derech hashar. And so he would stand by, the shar is the place where the Beit Din always was. Vayhi kol ha'ish asher yelo riv, lavo al ha'melech la'mishpat, people would come to see the king for purposes of justice. Vayikra Avshalom elav. And so Avshalom would engage them. Vayomer imiza irata, where are you from? See, you see Jewish geography as something with biblical roots. But again, you know, this was, and all the Mefarshim note this was very calculated, right? It appears to be sincere and caring. It was deeply calculated. Vayomer, and the person would respond, Me'achad shivtei Yisrael avdecha. Right? It shows you that the people had a perception of him as now the crown prince. So they would refer to him, Me'achad shivtei Yisrael avdecha. Right? As your servants. They would tell him from this part of the country, from that part of the country, but they would refer to themselves as an eved, you know, to him. Vayomer lav Avshalom, Re'ei dvaracha tovim u'nechochim. Now he would get to the, you know, whatever the issue in play was. And he would say, you know, what you're saying is, it's really true, it's good. Vishomeya in the chameis hamelech, if only the king, you know, would be willing to give you a fair hearing. But, you know, you and I both know that's not going to happen around here. So, again, you know, this is, you know, very fraudulent, you know, doesn't appear to be in any way sincere about the merits of the case. But shomei in lechamei samelach. So what Avshalom is doing, right, is he's making an argument. David is out of touch. He's not interested in you. Shomei in lechamei samelach. Vayomer Avshalom. So Avshalom, again, very coy. Mi yisimeni shofet baretz. Doesn't ask to be the melech, but he says, I just want to be the shofet. You know, I'm in this for you. I would just wanna, if I could do this without all the royal trappings, you know, I would. The only thing I'm really interested is in being a shofet, is helping you in being a judge. V'alayavo kolisha asher yelo rivu mishpat v'itzdaktiv. That way I could, you know, I could do the job. I could take care of your problems. So this is, you know, good old-fashioned populism right here, right? It's not really about whatever the truth is or who's right or who's wrong, but, you know, he's telling people what they want to hear, and that's always the most popular thing to tell anybody. And he's also laying the groundwork for this perception that, you know who's not really interested in your problems? My father. And now, you know, the ultimate populist touch. When somebody would come to bow down to him, so he would immediately say, no, you don't bow down to me. So Avshalom would bring the person close and he would kiss them. Right? He was very diligent about it. He did it every day. You know, he was building up his, you know, reputation in this regard. Right? And remember, everything is magnified. So he does this with one person, so that person goes back to their city, wherever it is, tells all their neighbors and friends, right? This is all, you know, retail politics, right? Asher yavo l'mishpat al ha-melech, v'yiganev am-shalom es lev anshe Yisrael. And in that way, you know, Avshalom is able to deceive the Jewish people. V'yiganev am-shalom es lev anshe Yisrael. Now here, you know, we have to point out, for starters, before we get into Avshalom's deception of his father, and maybe even we'll save that for next week, because I just want to really discuss this point extensively. Vayganev Avshalom eslev Yisrael. Now, anybody remember that scene when Shmuel goes to anoint one of the sons of Yishai? And Shmuel sees one of David's older brothers, happens to be Eliav. And he's very striking in his appearance. And Shmuel is convinced this is the guy. Ach, neged Hashem Mishicho. This is the one. And Hashem admonishes Shmuel. And he says, right, Al tabid al mareo vel gva komato. The appearance is not what I'm interested in. Ki ha'adam yireh le'inayim, because you're looking superficially. V'Hashem yireh le'levav. Exactly right, Daniel. Right? I'm looking to the heart. And David has the pure heart. So here we see, Daniel, that contrast that I was trying to point out. David is all about purity and nobility of heart. And that matters. You know, the Rambam has this comment where he talks about the importance of the king's heart. Because the Torah says in Parsha Shoftim that the king shouldn't have too many wives, velo yasur levavo, so that his heart isn't led astray. So the Rambam comments, al hasaras likbo hikbit hakasa, the Torah was very concerned about the purity of the king's heart, libo hulev kol hakal, because the heart of the king is the heart of the nation. As the king goes, so does the nation go. The leader is strong and fair and just, so shall society be. And if the leader is corrupt, duplicitous, so shall society be. Libo hulev kol hakal. So Avshalom, right, this idea of geneva slave, the fact that he stole their hearts, and that this is the way that he wants to insert himself into power, right? Here we have a betrayal of his father's legacy. Point one for the night. Point two for the night. You know, Absalom, obviously, every day, diligent, projecting like he cares about people, projecting this pseudo-humility, right? Oh, don't bow down to me, we're all equals here. I just wish I could serve you, you know, without all the trappings of royalty, as if he himself wasn't the one that did that. You know, me siveni shofet part. Okay, but let me ask one question. Why this particular line, where he says vishomeya ein lecha me'es hamelech? It's a really interesting way. There are a lot of ways of going about saying my father's out of touch, you're better off with me. There's a lot of ways of projecting that idea into the cultural space. Why that line? Vishomeya ein lecha me'es hamelech. You're not going to get a fair hearing from this king. What was that line about?
He didn't feel like he had a fair hearing.
That's correct. Okay. So what Avshalom is doing is, on the one hand, deeply deceptive. Is David actually does care about people. If you go over even this story, right? Remember, how did Avshalom get back to Yerushalayim? How did he even get back? Because what did Yoav do? Yoav sent a woman, right? It happened to be made up. But did David listen attentively to her? Of course he did. Was he caring about her plight? That one son had killed the other son, and now the tribe wants to kill her last remaining son? He was very sympathetic. So on the one hand, it's very duplicitous. It's very unfair. It's slander. But on the other hand, Absalom feels that there's some justice here. Because Ruth, as you said, he feels that he didn't get a fair hearing. Maybe Tamar didn't get a fair hearing. V'shomeya ein lecha me'es hamelech. Now, there's no doubt that Absalom feels this way. There's no doubt that Absalom felt that way from the beginning and took matters into his own hands. And there's no question that David has acted very passively throughout the story. But the irony is that had David acted, had he been more assertive, it would not have accrued to Absalom's benefit. Because what did Absalom actually deserve? If David didn't, again, act very passively out of love for his son, but what would have happened to Absalom had David really, you know, been more active?
He was a murderer.
Yeah, he should have been put to death. He killed somebody in cold blood. And he certainly would not be afforded, you know, kind of this, you know, royal position. So, you know, on the one hand, Absalom has, you know, there's some truth here. Oh, v'shomei and l'chamei samelach, I didn't get a fair hearing. On the other hand, it's like, you know, it's a really big lie in the sense that if David hadn't been blinded by his own compassion for his son, and he really had David actually acted as a melech, Absalom wouldn't be here to undermine and malign his father.
Would you say that Absalom felt comfortable killing Amnon because he knew his father would not act because he was so passive?
I think that was an unknown. But I think part of Absalom's character is his willingness to test the boundaries. He does it three times. When he kills Amnon, one. Two, when he sets Yoav's field on fire. And three, when Yoav comes to him and says, and he says to somebody who's perfectly capable of killing people, Yoav is not any kind of a wallflower, and says, look, either take me to the king or put me to death right here. So Absalom is prepared to always test the boundaries. I don't think that he could have known for sure how David would react. I don't think he could have known. But that's a feature of his personality. He waits for his moment, he strikes, he calculates, but I don't think he knows. And that's going to be true of the rebellion as well. He's got an aggressive streak to him, but again, not an impulsive streak. We really want to understand him. He's not impulsive. He's very calculating. This whole populist, you know, phenomenon that he's, you know, that he's engaging in, it's deeply calculated. But here's what I just want to point out. I just want to point out the basic dishonesty of his campaign. Again, number one, David actually did care about people. And Absalom wouldn't be back in Yerushalayim if David wasn't willing to give people a hearing, because the Isha Chachamah from Tekoa would have never gotten his attention. So it's factually misleading. But then in a deeper sense, as I pointed out, if David had been more actively oriented, there's no question that Absalom wouldn't be here. So his father's deep compassion for him, which led to this conflict where David didn't know what to do, because, you know, he's, on the one hand, Amnon is his son who's dead, on the other hand, Absalom is his son who killed, and Tamar is his daughter, and it's very hard to figure out how exactly to handle these things. And he obviously feels really guilty about what happened with Bathsheba, and, you know, who am I? You know, there are all these factors at play. But the conflict which results in passivity, and David is very conflicted, I don't deny that, in terms of how to handle it, but that's what's responsible for the passivity. But to portray that passivity as somehow the product of David being disconnected or not caring about the Jewish people is very, very unfair.
So how much do the general population know about all these activities?
You know, very little. Very little.
So to them, he's the populist who's doing, you know, he's doing, you know, he's a nice guy coming up the ranks.
And no question.
King's son.
Right. And he's making, and that's the, you know, kind of the evil genius of it all, is he makes sure that they see him as the inevitable heir apparent, right? Because he's got this whole, you know, the horses and the chariot and the whole, so he orders all of this entourage, and then he presents himself as, like, you know, this, you know, completely, you know, humble person, and I just want to serve you. So it's, you know, he's talking out of every side of his mouth.
Is he the oldest of the sons at this
oldest point? Surviving.
Yeah. So technically he has the right to think he's the heir apparent.
Right. Now, he also, Eva, to that point, he also feels like the clock is ticking. And that's something that the Ravenel and the Malbim both point this out, is that he knows he can't let Shlomo establish himself. That he's got to be really careful about. So he feels like he's got a window here. Right, he got himself back to Yerushalayim. Now he's got himself back to the palace, and he's got some time to build up his, you know, his brand, as they say, you know, Absalom, defender of the common man, you know, v'shomei l'chamei samelach, and then he's got to move. Then he's
That's also in direct contrast to David. David was always waiting till Hashem would tell him the right time,
Right, exactly right. Even, you know, as Shaul was acting, you know, as a real Rodev. So in all of these respects, he's nothing like his father at all. He's nothing like his father. And yet, right, the whole idea here is to present himself as the natural heir to his father. Now, what Avshalom is going to try to do, just to set up where we're going to go with this next week, is Avshalom, again, who's nothing like his father, actually, is obviously trying to present himself as a younger, more active version of his father. You know, my father, it's not that my father is a bad person, but it's that my father is, you know, he's out of touch. He doesn't have it anymore. It's that kind of a thing. Vishomei and lechamei samelach. And now, you know, you need me. You need me to take over. So, right, David obviously has a special place in the hearts of the Jewish people, going all the way back to Goliath. And the trick for Avshalom, is going to be to both discredit and slander David while presenting himself as David's natural heir. You know, I'm not overthrowing my father. I'm just relieving him of this terrible burden of having to serve the people. You know, let him go in peace. So that itself is a very cunning kind of of a move. But that's going to be, because where we'll pick things up next week, Avshalom is going to ask David for release to go to Hebron. And Avshalom is going to launch his rebellion from Hebron. Now you'll recall, 7 years and 6 months, David is the king in Hebron before he becomes king of the Jewish people in Yerushalayim. So what Avshalom is really trying to signal is the idea that I'm just a younger version of my father. I'm just here to continue what he stood for. Humble servant of the people as I am. And in that way, use all of the goodwill that his father built up, you know, vis-a-vis the Jewish people, use that, you know, for purely selfish purposes. And while at the same time, slandering his father, Vishomei and Lechamei Samelach. So again, here I think, just in these few psukim, we see the vanity, the deceptiveness, the calculating side, right, and also the grievance. Because, Ruth, I totally agree with you there. Vishomea in lechamei samelach, his grievance against his father. But again, you know, it's the fraudulent piece of it that I think is very important to understand, because I just can't emphasize this enough. Had his father been really acting as the melech and not as a very conflicted father, Avshalom would not be around. So the whole idea of, you know, we're all suffering under the negligence of, you know, this uncaring king is just so deeply untrue and self-serving. So, you know, whereas we might have had, I think, some measure of sympathy for Avshalom, especially when what happened to Tamar happened, whatever shreds remain after, you know, his murder of Amnon, I don't think a person can read this and not sort of just be horrified by, this kind of a lust for power, and, you know, the way that he treats his father in particular is, you know, particularly horrific. The Chazal tell us that the Nevi'im always end, on a positive note. So let me just say, you know, you can fool a lot of the people a lot of the time, but the good news that we'll take a look at next week is that you can't fool everybody. And not everybody is fooled. And in some ways, these are the kind of moments that really help. You can learn a lot about somebody from the way that they react to this and the way they react to this kind of a person. And so what's heartening here is that even though we can say that there was a Geneva Stas, then broadly speaking, Vayignov Avshalom Eslev B'nai Yisrael, that he did trick a lot of the people, there are going to be some really good people that stand out in their loyalty to David. And that's something to look forward to next week, is to really perceive that, to see that the people who see through this charade and see Avshalom for who he is. And that's a heartening note to conclude on. So with that, God willing, next week we'll pick it up with the second phase, the actual launching of the coup d'etat from Hebron. And I want to wish everybody a good night. Hopefully next week we'll have some better weather.
Thank you, Rabbi.
All right.
Rabbi, can I ask you a question?
Daniel, by all means.